In a world where Toku fans are easy and the wrong figure arts are released for retail, three man children stand not quite shoulder to shoulder with their trusty spray can at their side, united across timelines and space against the congealed, grimdark 90s inspired hordes. Shuku and Shinobi, Dossum Rifle, Jedi Mom, Aerosol. Their mission, to bring you the latest Toku news in the craziest way possible. Riders, Rangers, and Rambles Season 4. If you don't listen to this show, you don't know anything about Tokusatsu.
Hello, welcome to RS Season 4, Episode 49.
Saving Private Orion.
Oh god, I forgot it was that.
It worked out after all.
Oh.
Save Private Orion. Save Orion's privates?
I'm so sorry, Aerosol. I'm so, so sorry.
I told him earlier this week that he should have saved it, and here I forgot about it anyway.
I want to save Orion's privates.
So.
One ups.
Onesies! Be infamous again.
He lapped me. On your left.
I get that joke.
Overall, I really liked it. I think I liked the good playthrough a little bit better in terms of the story. But it didn't actually really change a whole lot between the good and the bad stories. And I think that was a little bit of a bummer.
I think that I like the storylines on both the original Infamous games better. I thought they were just a little less basic. Like, this one was fun, and I liked the character and, like, the whole concept of it, but the other one just seemed a little more interesting to follow.
Yeah, no, I get
but,
that.
But, the basic bitches.
But I think this one's set up for more potential sequels that could be really good.
Right.
I do miss Lightning. And running into things with concrete powers. Better get out of here! Oh, whoops, that was a mistake. Now for real. Dead.
I got the concrete powers again this morning when I was playing. And it made me laugh because of our conversation from yesterday or whatever.
It's so difficult to maneuver.
But yeah, that's actually it. Like, I haven't bought anything because I don't have any money.
I know what that's like.
That is it.
Okay, let's see. Up to the minute one-ups, I finally finished writing in the Scarlet Letter, so all 290 pages are filled out with random nonsense and logos. So that's fun. I finished Infamous, and I 100%ed it yesterday, so I'm probably going to go back through and play my Evil playthrough now, because I'm like sort of addicted to it now. But I really should move on to other games, but I'm probably going to do that. I haven't bought anything, really. Oh, I did buy... I was at Toys R Us the other day, and I bought... They have these new little, like, mini Yu-Gi-Oh! Statue things, and I bought the Blue-Eyes White Dragon one, because I thought it looked really cool.
Yeah, I remember someone tweeted about that.
Yeah, they have, like, Dark Magician, and Blue-Eyes, and Kuribo, and, why was it White Magician? White Eyes... God damn it. Odd Eyes Boob Dragon. Hashtag Future Past.
Boob.
But, White Eyes... Damn it! Blue Eyes White Dragon looked the coolest, so I bought him. But I think that's it. There really hasn't been much going on that I can think of.
Oh, I'm still addicted to this fucking Battle Troze game. I'm at 79%.
Is there neon powers in that game?
No, there's no neon. What?
Doesn't exactly.
What the fuck is it? I don't know what's happening right now.
It's from Infamous. They were just talking about it.
Well, I don't know all things about that game, so I got a couple more boxes in. I got my Wizard Ring finale set and my Wizard Dragon. Those are nice. They're pretty. And I got the rest of that order with the Fuck My Cox in it. Because that's the thing.
Fuck my WAP.
Yes.
Sorry, I got it right.
And then I'm still waiting on my other boxes to get here. I don't know when they'll be here.
Is Kurokage still gone?
Kurokage is still on that Malaysian flight.
It's kind of like
he's on
Joichi. I wonder what Kurokage is up to. Just eat your parfait. It'll be fine. Just look at the flowers, Lizzie. Look at the flowers.
That's exactly what's happening.
Hopefully it doesn't go the way of Nedge's Fang Joker.
Oh, God.
Good old classic 2009 or whatever the fuck it was. 2010.
Just remember that. We know the tracking from March 29th says that it's,
It's not made up. It's not made up.
What?
Sorry. You can't have side conversations with the side chick.
The tracking says it's in New York. But,
they probably, well, like, dropped it on the ground and used
JDF
it.
JDF doesn't allow other packages outside of himself to be there, so that's probably what happened. He nixed it. He's like, only my package comes to New York.
So that's why it takes so long.
That's exactly.
So dirty. I love it. Mr. S gets all these AC figures and does not get AC-04. I'm so sad. Like, they put him on a Mandarin. Like, here's an AC-04. I'm like, oh, okay. They're like, yeah, it's like $30. I'm like, that's twice retail.
They had a Zangetsu gets you there for like $60 the other day.
Yeah, they've been putting up some really ridiculous things. And I'm like, no, it is definitely not worth this price. You need to go the fuck away. Like, it's annoying, but I don't know. I still need the Jinba Gaim and the Pine Ichigo set. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. I like so much shit coming here. I don't know. I'm still trying to sell stuff. That's slowed down some. I need money. Brian, want to buy some figure arts? I have plenty to sell.
No. Aerosol's turn.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
No, he literally just means he's leaving. He's fed up.
No.
Oh, yeah. Him. Well, I could do that, too. I'm eating a muffin.
Best one-ups ever.
Did you get it from Donna's boyfriend?
No.
The smile on Ron's
apparently
face was great.
The best muffins ever.
The smile on Ron's face was the best.
I kind of wish I had a mustache like his, just because I don't know, I like it when he smiles. It just looks funny with it.
Oh, God, we're going to meet Aerosol. He's going to be dressed as Ron Swanson. That would be amazing.
I wish I had his hair. I really do. I wish I had hair.
You could just get a wig.
I thought you liked not having hair.
I do.
Why do you wish you had hair?
Because it's a joke.
Oh, well.
Because I'm bald. Get it?
What?
The only thing that I've done this week is purchase my Morphicon ticket, for one. I figured it was about time to do that, as well as my plane ticket, which I would have bought it last night, but my bank puts a limit on how much I can spend at one given time. So I couldn't.
Crazy weekend in Vegas.
So I had to, you know, I had to call up my bank today and get that fixed. But because I got delayed, another flight opened up. And it just so happened to be the flight that lets me go to Burbank with Brian and Awesome.
Team friendship!
It's like some sort of weird magical voodoo thing.
He also had trouble finding it because he kept typing in planegates.com and couldn't figure out why there was no flights on it. I love the idea of plane gates. Like, I'm picturing that stereotypical, like, gates of heaven, but for planes. So it's just, like, really run down. I don't know why it would be run down.
My niece does that, too. Like, she'll come up with really odd descriptions for things that she doesn't know the actual name to. Like, she called my mom's classroom a teacher room or something like that. And like she told me that all adults get teacher rooms when they grow up.
That's just true. I got mine last week. Finally. It's like Brian's giant.
I can't imagine Dawson teaching anyone anything.
I'm going to teach people law.
Oh, yeah.
Greendale.
I teach law at Greendale, so I don't know much about law.
I feel like if I was a teacher, I would be like Duncan when he taught anthropology. Today we learn about something. Is this the anesthesia class? Yes, go with it.
All right. So what's on our first little lineup for news?
Your mom. Well, let's headline it with the gossip. We're becoming the TMZ of Toku podcasts. Earlier today, JDF slapped Austin St. John right across the face with a tomato. No, it was a pepper. Damn it.
Then Austin St. John threw beating. The head of the guy he killed in Thailand at JDF.
So there's been more drama this week, which has been very fun. Austin St. John has been like sort of coordinating what concert convention appearances. He's going to become a singer now. It's going to be great. convention appearances that he's going to be doing. And he said that he cannot go to, is it Chicago and New York, that he cannot get like some of the conventions because some sort of superstar ranger has a contract that he can be the only ranger there unless he approves it, which it's pretty obvious it was JDF, and that sparked a lot of drama. Meanwhile, JDF's over there being like, I'm king of the peppers. Yeah. Like, with all of this, how is no one, like, you know, drawn attention to that besides us? I mean, this is a disturbed man.
I like how Austin, after he said that, put up several other messages and was like, oh, me and JDF are fine. It's just contract things. It happens. Didn't mean to start a bashing thing. I'm like, that's cute.
I like how
he backtracked real quick.
I like how he like apologizes and says he doesn't want people bashing, and then JDF does like these really passive aggressive like subtweets. Like, I would go for a dollar. I don't need the money unless Austin St. John signs up. But cause that was sort of, it seemed like it was a passive aggressive response to Austin St. John saying that Saban offered them very little. Which, you know, I can see why they wouldn't want to come back if they're offered very little, considering if you listen to any of the MMPR panels listening to how horribly they were treated, I'd be like, I don't think I want to go back to that. Mm-hmm. Plus, I heard Zatcher was there. So.
Well, it's not just that, but, I mean, if you're coming back, right, just to do this little thing, you got to go all the way to New Zealand, you got to interrupt your life, that not everybody's job is going to exactly be like, oh, yeah, sure, you can just go, like, leave for New Zealand for 3 weeks or whatever. Because they can't just go for, like, a day.
Plus, you might run into Dwight on his connecting flight to Mordor, and that's just unpleasant. But, yeah, it's been interesting to watch, like, everybody turn on JDF. Like, I was trying to talk about community today, and my timeline's filled with, fuck JDF, I'm burning all his autographs and pissing on them. I'm like, whoa, everybody, he used to be my hero. No, he's nothing. No more JDF. It's like, hashtag mob.
I love how one of the hashtags is no more Tommy, and I feel kind of bad because I'm like, well, Tommy really didn't do anything.
Tommy didn't
do anything. His actor did. I still like Tommy.
The actor's just a cock.
It's funny because I was going to make a tweet about how everyone's freaking out about this feud, but no one made like drew attention to that insane Pepper tweet or whatever. So I was like going through his Facebook trying to find exactly what he said, and I couldn't end up finding it. But like just going through it, it looks so deranged. Like it's a combination of food pictures and him pointing and making weird faces and like advertisements and yeah and ha ha and LOLs everywhere. It's like going on the Joker's Facebook page. It's pretty crazy.
Did we mention the one when he was bribing people to comment on his Instagram?
Oh no, we didn't mention that, but I saw that. Be the first comment or pay you $10. Yeah.
He is so desperate for attention, and he points out anytime he finds something green, it doesn't matter what it is. He sees green shit, he takes a picture of it and posts it. Look at that green, yeah. Dude, that's grass.
Green Ranger leading the tomatoes, yeah.
I just love that he had a thought process of not only doing that, but then sharing it. Like, I would like to observe him in the supermarket doing that. Why is that man taking that pepper and placing it on top of the tomatoes and then taking
sure.
the picture?
I'm not sure what's sadder, him doing that or all of the people that legitimately love that he does that. Like, you read the comments on that photo, and it's all like, ha, great picture, JDF. Man, you're so awesome. Like, guys, he's tweeting about how he's a pepper eating tomatoes. This is not a cool picture. This is a man. This is a cry for help.
I like the idea of him just taking the picture in the supermarket. And, like, you just see him while he's taking it, he's just going, yeah, the whole time. Like, it just, that's insane. That should definitely go on the Ranger board.
Like, I don't understand. Like, these people, they love him so much. I don't, like, I understand liking him, but this extreme, like, he put up that picture. You saw the one Zeron screenshotted of, like, it's like, who would win, the Arrow or Jade or Tommy? Oh. And the one person was like, anyone who says the Arrow is just a fanboy. Like, wait. What?
I love the ridiculous matchups he'll put up where he'll be like, who would win, me or Darth Maul? There's not even a fucking question. He would just, like, throw you away. It's not even, like, that's just an unfair matchup.
Everyone's like, oh, well, the Dragon's Orb would stomp on Darth Maul. No, I'm pretty sure Darth Maul would just pick up the Dragon's Orb with his mind and fling it.
Like, it's crazy, those matchups. It's like, JDF's a legend. There's no way he could lose. I'm like, I don't like Superman, but I'm willing to admit he would beat most people he goes up in a matchup, except for Goku, which we'll talk about later when I flip out. But I'm just saying, like, it makes no sense. Like, I've seen that matchup several times. I'm like, why are they singling out Darth Maul? I think any, like, the little Padawans from the training sequence in Attack of the Clones could take Tommy. It would just force choke him with our little baby hands. I don't know. We're getting off topic.
Got baby hands. Well, you know what it is? I think it's because he's Ray Park or something for doing all these Comic Cons and shit. He picks people he knows. Like, he took those pictures with Matt Smith and Karen Gillan.
Doctor wants to meet me. Yeah. You don't even know who they is. You just thought he was a physician. You were like, can you take this mole on my back?
He's like, I'm not that kind of doctor. And then you're like, no, I don't care. Just check it.
One thing that I would really like to see, and I come up with these things all the time. It's like, well, what if this happened instead of this? I would love to see if someone else was cast as Tommy. Like, say if Jason David Frank was cast as Jason and Austin St. John was cast as Tommy. The reason most people like JDF so much is because he was Tommy.
Yeah.
If you replace JDF with
literally anyone,
Austin St. John or anyone in that situation, and keeping them having the lineage that he does in the role, I'd really like to see how people would be now if it would have the same sort of, like, hype train.
Yeah. It would be interesting, because wasn't the White Ranger, like, one of the red herrings, like, Richie or something? What if it had been that dude? Like, he went on to be in Dino Thunder and shit.
If I remember right, it was supposed to be Ryan, was it Brad
Hawkins? That was the Gold Ranger, wasn't it?
Oh, that was Gold. No, he was gold. He was supposed to be white.
He was supposed to be white, because JDF was going to have his own show.
Yeah, but he did the voiceover for the Gold Ranger.
No,
yeah,
he did.
This is unrelated.
You're related. Sorry.
After he stopped being Green Ranger, they were going to give JDF his own show.
As VR Troopers, but then he didn't do it.
As VR Troopers, because people were like, no, we want Tommy back on our Power Rangers. And so they switched the two actors and turned, because it was going to be a solo show for JDF. He wasn't going to have two funky...
He was going to have Carly.
It was just going to be Matalder or whatever.
Yeah, it was just going to be Matalder. And then they changed it and put, you know, Ryan Steele or whatever. And they said, well, we can't have, like, an unknown, so we need to take Spielbond and mash it with Matalder until they have freaky Metal Hero sex. And we'll bring JDF back as the White Ranger.
Because I thought they were going to also make him gold. And then they, I fell through, and then they're like, let's just do the incest triplets. And that's how it happened.
I also want you to imagine freaky Metal Hero sex.
Because my favorite version of the Gold Ranger was just when he had the cool Ryan Steele voice.
Yeah,
I feel like they probably just did that because they pretty much fucked him over with the White Ranger thing.
Yeah, I want to know why Jason didn't get a morpher. Because I bought the thing thinking that's going to be in the show, and then it wasn't
the
show.
He was just like, I'm so badass, my wrists just glow. Like, Gold Ranger power, fuck! And then he just became it.
Because I love that morpher. Even though the latch won't always stay closed properly. But I love that thing. I love the little crystal. And he never uses it. Like, he uses the fucking crystal to activate Pyramidus. But
because of Sentai footage.
Well, yeah, because of Sentai footage. And, I mean, a little kid, King Ranger, had it. Because that's his changer.
Kid Ranger.
Because the Zeonizers were just the Japanese toy. But...
Why is it bad I use a Japanese toy?
Because they were cheaper.
His morpher was essentially the power staff.
Yeah.
He carried it around at the end when he's like, oh, I can't take it anymore because my contract's up, so I got to give it back to the incest triplets that I think merged into one at that point. I don't remember that storyline very well. Wasn't there a disease that they became triplets? Maybe that's what Leslie has.
It was that...
The baby has two bodies.
It's not that they became triplets. It's that the three personalities that make up a Triforia and they were split. Because they can split into three, but that they were
like
split
TID
up.
Like that manifested into actual like more people.
They couldn't join back together into their one into one body.
Well, I didn't like them. They were weird.
I know
I
met them.
They
were cool.
You got excited oiling them up at Morphicon while Cat was looking at the cat ears, but he's the Gold Ranger? Some weirdo we've never heard of. And they're like really weird, and they have one Twitter account, and like I imagine they speak in unison really creepily. They just freak me out.
They do that thing where they're having sex with their wives, and they just swap up. Like I need to go to the bathroom, honey, and the other one comes in.
And they all tweet about it. I don't know why like the joint Twitter account freaks me out so much, but it does. It's like they don't. They're not have their own identities. How do we get talking about that?
I guess JDF's a fuck.
The bottom line is this drama is hilarious. And people are like, we need to make this stop and hold up to the values of Power Rangers. I'm like, no! I want to keep watching it.
So meanwhile, Blake Foster's over here like, nobody's letting me go to cons. No one's inviting me. I quit. Fuck this shit.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Blake.
I think the problem is he goes to con and he's like, hey, I was the Blue Ranger and can I go? Who are you? That's probably what it boils down to.
I was the Blue Ranger. You're not Billy. Son of a bitch.
And then he's just like, hashtag Blue Crew in their face, and they're like, security. So that probably happens. And he was super nice when we met him. But
yeah, he's
a cool guy.
I know. That's why, like, I feel bad for him because he's
so
not JDF.
I still want him to come back to the show. I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, I thought it would be interesting just because he was a kid and then coming back as an adult. I thought he would have been a really good sort of Megaforce cameo for like a Mentor Ranger. But, yeah, I don't know. There's all kinds of drama going on. Except for, like, all the Disney actors who have actual work. They're, like, on all these primetime shows. Meanwhile, the Saban era people are just, like, completely milking their autograph prices.
Matt Austin's over here making movies. Like, meeting
Danny
the Emperor.
Sitting there, still tweeting stuff I don't understand.
Brandon McLaren's doing a lot of stuff.
He's in that show.
Graceland.
Because I watched the first episodes of it, and he was in Falling Skies, and then the Skitters ate him out from the inside. Poor guy. He was like, tiny Skitters. And Rose McIver was in. She played Tinkerbell on Once Upon a Time, and now she's getting her own show. And what's her name? Tanaya was on Teen Wolf.
She's on Rain now.
Yeah.
And then that one girl took her clothes off in Spartacus.
Anna Hutchinson? I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and she was... All the Disney actors always find work, and JDF's like, remember me from the 90s for money. JDF's never had a real job in his life.
Remember me from the 90s for money. Sounds like Amy Jo Johnson.
Moving along from the hysterical drama hope just continues because it makes me happy inside.
And it gives us something to talk about, and we enjoy talking about it for some reason.
The Tokusatsu Network recently, at least...
The Tokatsu Network. Brian.
Yeah.
Why can't you say things properly?
I got him awful. Bannery. Tom Constantine... it was really funny when you started talking about that. Did a interview with Robert Baldwin, the fellow who plays Ramirez in Kyoryuger.
You need to lick my dick, motherfucker.
And my one and only question going into it was, does he speak normal? And he does. Admittedly, I was slightly disappointed he didn't speak like Ramirez all the time. I thought it would be kind of funny.
In the middle of the interview, he just goes, Honky Don!
It's a... basically an hour and a half interview, so get the popcorn ready. But it was a really nice interview, and it's
you watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I think it's really interesting to see an interview from someone who's so much into the toku industry over there. that can actually fully express everything because he's a fluent English speaker. So I think that's a really interesting thing, and he talked about a lot about his life and then time with was he in Grand Caesar?
Yes. No, Caesar X.
Caesar X?
He was in the show with Ankh.
Ah, right. And he talked about that, and then
and
obviously
Barazorg.
He talked about his time on Kyoryuger and stuff too, so that was really interesting. And if you have the time and you really like Ramirez and stuff, I do recommend checking that out, just because it was a really interesting.
It's interesting because we don't really get, like you said, because they're not English-speaking, and you don't really see many interviews. So it's not like with Toku here, even any other shows you follow, you can read interviews or news articles and find out sort of behind-the-scenes stuff. But we don't really have much contact with behind-the-scenes over there. And now we find out that he's just sipping coffee with Torin. It's like, I'm just getting this weird image of Torin sitting there with coffee. And he's like, was the head off? I don't know.
The head was either off or dangling in front. I don't remember.
Now, Brian, here's a better question. Who doesn't like Ramirez?
Bad people.
Anybody from Devos.
People without, well, that's true, I
like,
guess. People without a soul.
The character of Ramirez was so cool in the first place, and then, I mean, when you watch the interview, he's like, he's such a nice guy that there's no physical way you could, like, hate him. And it was a nice interview. I don't really have a whole lot else to say, but it was definitely
Ramirez from Morphicon 4.
Really? He did say that he would be totally up for conventions anywhere, as long as they paid for his trip, obviously. And so that would be really amazing if they could get him somehow. That would be really cool. He also mentioned that he would totally play the role of Cyan in Dino Charge.
As much as I hate for things to be the same, I think that would be pretty historical for that to happen.
Yeah.
And he would get to speak normally.
I thought it was funny. He mentioned how he got the script to play Ramirez, and it obviously had a color next to the name, so he had to look up what Cyan was.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was kind of amusing.
The only reason I know what Cyan is because we used to have an old Crayola computer game my sister had when she was a kid on an old ass computer that they actually used Cyan. So I remember hearing that when I was a kid, going, what the fuck is Cyan?
I know it because of printers.
I know, well, it because of Kyoryuger now.
I know, right? So does everyone.
I like it because, or I like the fact that he, you know, was like really like honored to be a ranger and be like a first time white, like actual white person ranger in Japan, and you know, be the first of a color, which is pretty neat when you think about it. And then he's like, of course, then we had another first. As if he was like, it sounded like he was almost jealous. Like, he thought he was going to be the first time, like the only first time ranger on there. He's like, then we got another first. It was gray. I love how he brought up that people would joke with that guy and say that you forgot to polish your suit. Because he used to be silver, Boken silver.
That was really funny.
That was funny.
Yeah, he said the joke on set was, did you forget to polish your suit? And I think that's really fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. I like that there's little jokes like that when, you know, because there's so many of the roles cross over there, more so than here, except for, like, Decker and stuff.
Yeah.
Cassidy and all those people that from the Disney era that just kept coming back.
He also really wants to do a rider show, if Toei ever would ask him to do something.
I think that would be fun. I would love to see what kind of role they would give him. In a writer show?
Let's do it.
Yes, our first fat writer.
Oh, yeah. So it was a really fun interview. It will be pretty cool to see him go to Morphicon at some point.
Mostly, I just want to shake his hand, possibly give him a hug and get an autograph.
I like the idea of you just shaking his hand and hugging him and not saying anything, and then just walking away.
I love the idea
you just
of us
take his hand and put it on the thing and autograph it. It's just getting weird. I'm picturing a really weird scene. Let's hunt him down. He's going around the corner.
I love the idea of us having to bail Brian out of jail for hugging Robert Baldwin.
Worth it. For real, worth it.
Then we really would have to take the cans around to the freaking. Why would you take the cans?
They're fucking poor.
That's how we spent our last night in California, folks. Turning cans in and buying cheese. True story.
It was on sale.
I know. I'm like, dude, we're leaving tomorrow. That's like 3 packs. You pulled it off.
I love how that's all Brian can say is, but it was on sale.
It was. Hibiki Sansa's never pass up a good deal.
That's why I have so many things on their way to me now. I can't pass up a good deal. I now hope that the Boken Silver guy is as cool as Ramirez, just to see fun antics between the two of them.
Where?
I don't know. In my pants.
I'm like, wait, the series is over? What, is there something I don't know about?
In my pants. That's where the action needs to be.
I'm so confused. Do we have anything else to discuss?
The people on the M-Bus aren't dead.
Oh, the Forze novel thing.
I actually thought they were dead.
Well, they would be, you know, pretty much dead if they were just stuck up there forever. That's a pretty big oversight for the series. It's not like, oh, we forgot this storyline. You forgot people.
I can't believe they didn't even show any of that in some fashion. Like, even they're there. Like, not even showing them being rescued, but, like, in the end part of the show them actually existing somewhere.
Because even Dragon Knight, like, all the people got dumped from the Amit Void. Apparently there's, like, deleted scenes that of, like, showing all their stories we're never going to get to see because that license is somewhere in La La Land. that's pretty big oversight.
We're probably going to get our next book-based figure art with the fucking Icarus thing. Did they say what?
Did we find out what the presenters are?
Nope.
Is it just like the American Idol judges?
It's basically just a side story with a dude, not a Shiko, basically.
Oh, fan favorite. Arms are less breakable because it's not a woman.
I don't know, Dawson has ham hands, so he'll probably still break it.
Stupid fuck. Anyway. Alright, so that about covers the newsies.
Penis.
So now it is time for
superhero time! Takuda! That was me being Ticket.
Oh, okay, got it.
Gaim!
That was weird.
I know. I couldn't think of a fun way to say Gaim.
Ticket, whose existence is now questionable.
Yeah. The guy's just mentally unstable.
I found that scene to be pretty funny, honestly.
I now believe
that he is just a pedophile, and he's actually kidnapped children, but they're so terrified by what's happening, they're imagining themselves as adults. I just uncovered Tokyuger.
Genius.
He didn't even notice it. Like, I thought there was going to be a moment where he was like, he like scrambled to put the puppet back on, but he was just sitting there wiping his face.
With the puppet. I like how Hikari's like, I'm just going to pretend I didn't see this and move along.
Oh, that was pretty good.
Like, that whole thing was funny.
The episode overall was okay. I like that they used the color change thing in a clever way again. They TJ'd it.
Yeah, I actually kind of like that.
That was a total TJ.
I hope they continue that. Like, not like spam it every episode, but when they use it, make it something clever. So I like how it's always it's something really small. Like, it's not this big battle strategy, but it was just like a simple switcheroo. but I like that they used that.
It was a black man strategy.
Kari apparently found the mute switch on the Tokyo Changer.
I know. I wish I could find it.
But no, it was a fun episode. It was probably one of my favorites of the ones we've gotten. I mean, that's not saying a whole lot, but I didn't really have too many issues with it, and the color change was used good.
It's used well.
It's used Nito.
Nito Burrito.
It's used Beast. And so I liked that.
It once again showed us that Japanese people love soccer.
Yes. Always with the...
You run around, I run around. Best song ever.
Thoroughly, like, cool. The kids were like, oh, yeah, you like, you're good at soccer. We'll tell you our secrets. Like, oh, is that all it takes? Okay.
Doesn't take much to impress the kiddies.
Well, it doesn't take much to impress anyone with soccer. Look, I kicked a ball. Oh, thanks. Good job.
I thought it was neat that the normal trains and the diesel Russia, if you look at their dashboard, it has lights for Tokyo 6 and another zero. One that just says Tokyo 0 or Tokyo 0. Honestly, I read it, I'm like, oh, so that just makes Tokyo 0. I didn't even think about reading it as a zero. As a number until someone on Twitter mentioned it to me.
It was an 0. Like, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be a 0, because that what makes sense. But it was like a clear circle. It was an 0. I'm like, there's no way that's... Zeros have an oval shape, guys. You're doing it wrong.
Was that an actual, like, that thing that someone said, oh, look, it's a leaked picture of Zero, or was that just somebody drawing over orange?
I think that was just a fake picture, but it's a legit rumor going around right now, obviously, that there's going to be a Tokyo Zero who has some Japanese name with the Zero pun in it and stuff.
I think he has a Japanese name. I'm like, don't they all have Japanese names, Brian?
Well, I mean, like Ichigo, Nigo, Rokugo and stuff, but...
just be Tokyo Zero Go.
That's an actual rumor right now, but I think that picture was a fake picture. But we'll see what happens. That was really cool, and if there is a Tokyo Zero, I think it's really neat that they were kind of thinking that far ahead.
Yeah.
And it's a cool little thing for people who pay attention to stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a neat little, like, foreshadowing, kind of like how far they foreshadowed the sort of early GoBusters other mecha and stuff like that.
Yeah, with the blueprints and stuff.
Yeah, that was fairly early on, like, quite a bit. And remember, Brian's like, there's no way Beat Buster's not going to be evil for a while. Classic.
I don't think, Brian.
I ever said no way.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I'm pretty sure you're full of shit.
Keep sending in the
oats. I'm
pretty
sure you like the dick.
But look, yeah,
I'm positive that there is no way Saban buying back PR could be a bad thing.
Okay, I'll admit I said that.
Yeah, it was a neat little hint at what's to come. I honestly had to back up the I honestly had to back up the video just to catch it, because
he said
I saw it the first time. I'm like, wait a minute, that had more than 5 lights on it.
Wait a minute, what's after 5? What's that weird number? I'm still waiting for Tokyo Durfko. Tokyo Durfko. It's going to be great. Durf. Go, classic. Everything's classic tonight. Night of the Word is classic.
Classic Dolph, suck a dick.
Whatever. Classic Devin.
Captain Awesome.
So, I don't really have too much else to say. Dieselos next week. That's cool.
I want to buy a diesel train this week, Brian. Buy me one.
No, buy your own.
Fuck.
Yep.
I think you should.
I don't have too much else to say either.
Yeah.
I liked watching Tokadi try to get a baby to tell him where the train was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. He's like, have you seen Diesel? And the baby's like, I'm a baby. Whatever babies say.
You just mentioned it, and I forgot to actually talk about it. In the episode, the conductor's trying to push the brakes up on the train because the brakes are broken.
Yes.
And so he's pushing on the lever, and he's using, like, his ticket hand. That's a weird phrase. And so Ticket's got the lever in his mouth, and he's trying to push it, and then he just, like, stares at it and rips Ticket off of his hand and then uses both of his hands. Ticket is just lifeless on the console train and remains such until it goes back on his hand eventually. But Hikari comes in and after the train stopped, and he uses Ticket's butt cloth. You want
butt
to call it.
Butt cloth? That's what Brian calls pants. We gotta go. Hold on, I gotta put on my butt cloth.
I was legit uncomfortable by that.
And he's using it as like a handkerchief to wipe the sweat off of his face, and Hikari is just like totally creeped out at like Ticket's lifeless body being used as a handkerchief. He's like, I'm gonna pretend I never saw that, and he just leaves. And we know nothing after that. So.
Well, after that, the conductor actually put his hand up, and he had his hand in the motion like you would do for a puppet moving its mouth, but Ticket wasn't there, and he's just like looking at his hand. He's like,
I'm sort of pretty sure he's insane.
Yeah, because it calls into question his insanity. Was it just supposed to be humorous or something more?
Like, I enjoy Ticket. I like how serious they...
Kevin's point. I enjoy Ticket.
No, like, I like how serious, like, they, like, everyone just plays off the whole thing with the puppet. Like, they just go on about, like, it's an actual legit character.
Well, that's the thing, is that what's more disturbing is that he's pretending this puppet's real or that everyone just believed it. Like, oh, okay, they just kind of argue with each other about whether we're dead or not. It's whatever.
Like, that's what's funny, is, like, they just play it off so serious. Like, yeah, that's an actual character. What do you mean?
I honestly, now I kind of want a scene somewhere down the line where the conductor is just like, everyone, I have a secret I must tell you. I'm Ticket. And everyone's just like, yeah.
I think it'd be funnier if they were shocked. Like, no way, I refuse to believe it.
Like, what do you mean he's not real? Especially Kagura with her stupidity. What do you mean Ticket's not real? Soon tell that bitch Santa's not real. I'll just fucking cut her wrists.
When did Santa get into this?
I don't know. Your mom is Santa Claus.
Yay, presents. Okay. So... is it about that gime?
It's about your mom's gime time.
And I guess it's gime time.
It's that gime of the month.
Yeah. Oh, no. That might be a future title. If there's ever a story we have about periods, then you never know.
That's a story around here every so often.
So, waka. This episode, kind of like Brian ended up saying, I didn't end up being as annoyed by it as I thought I was going to be. Oh, my God. There was certainly some really... out there moments for
Shinichi in a dress.
Yeah. And his just sulking in the dress with the girls walking in.
My favorite scene is Shinichi in drag, huddled in the fetal position in the corner, and the words coming up, "Never give up," plays on the screen. That is hilarious to me.
I did like the consistent use of the "Never give up" jingle throughout that entire like 2 minute little presentation. That's a weird
presentation.
Why did I say that?
They put on a show to see if they could stay on the
show. That's the word I want.
See, that they are teaching kids to be gay.
So that was a thing. I personally enjoyed their time at the park because we got to see the mantis playscape again. And
the mantis playscape?
Always, or the grasshopper mantis. I assumed it was a mantis, but
they're the same thing. They're both green.
It could be a grasshopper. I don't know. It's the thing that Jay was fighting in GoBusters.
Oh.
And so whenever that pops up, I'm happy. But
yeah, they had some definitely out there wacky scenes, but I also like that they actually had some sort of character moments where they kind of touch on Joinji just kind of feeling very lost. And it was only a couple of little scenes, but we even got to see Oren actually get a little quiet. He calmed down and actually seemed more like a person. And I like that we sort of got that, and he wasn't like always on, and he sort of acted more of as a mentor that or a friend to him, and it wasn't always this crazy, annoying shit. And it kind of made me see that they have potential. I don't think that they'll never stop being silly completely if they stay around more, but I think that it gave me a little bit more faith that if they stay around, they have potential as characters. And it was also good to see them sort of catch on about what's going on. And
yeah, that's something I did like about this episode.
I didn't realize that Bravo legitimately didn't realize that the cracks were happening. I thought he was just trolling them. Like, he legitimately thought the beat writers were causing it. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was essentially led astray by Yggdrasil.
Yeah, so. But I thought they told him that wasn't the cause, and he was just paying him. So I thought that he knew, but they were just paying him off. So I didn't know that he legitimately didn't know that.
Yeah, like, I was like, oh, he actually doesn't know. Holy shit.
It seems... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, it's okay, it's not important.
I was just going to agree, like, the quieter moments I did appreciate a little bit more. As silly as it is seeing Oren carry Jonichi on his back into the sunset is, you know, it does at least show that Oren actually does kind of care for him. I mean, he isn't just some lackey that he has working for him in his pastry shop. He actually does kind of care about his well-being. And I kind of like that. Unfortunately, just this whole episode just really does remind me of... It is one of Gaim's shortcomings overall, is that we get so much plot in other areas, you know, the areas that actually matter, that when we focus on these characters, they don't really feel as significant as they maybe should.
Yeah.
So, you know, this episode feels like it should have been earlier, but because of how much has been going on, we couldn't really fit it in, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of the issue that arises when you have a writer who's writing so much, but given so little time to get it across each episode. Like, if we had hour-long episodes, he could have peppered in this whole... sort of mentor relationship that the two of them have over the course of it, but because we have to do so much in, you know, 20 some minutes, it kind of has to fall to the wayside and wait until episode 20 something before we can really get to it. But I do hope that this does lead to them tying back in. I don't really know what's going to happen to Oren. He kind of jumped into a crack and I
broke
think
his mama's
it zipped
back.
Up on him.
Yeah, it was like there's something about Mary, but like giant size. But it's funny how just even like how far behind they are in plot. Like, they were around a bit when he got the Jimba arms and like when they were fake kidnapping his sister, but still they feel like they were just in the background. Like, everything all massive is happening, and like everyone's going through character changes, and we're finding out more stuff, and the plot's progressing, and they're either not there or they just feel like they're in the background. So it's kind of funny when we see them again for an extended period of time, just how far behind they are on events, because everyone else is going through so much. Like, I was thinking about how when Coda saved him by going Kachidoki, I was thinking about how Bravo used to be a serious threat for them when they were like rookies and like they could not beat him. And now Kota is like so far beyond him. It's like he's like Super Saiyan 4 and Bravo just does like Kaioken. It's like ridiculous because he just like, you know what, screw this. I'll just lay down some beats and destroy everyone in 3 seconds.
Like, but it almost feels like that was part of the point of the episode, is that they're over here doing their thing and they're like, wait, what the fuck's going on around us? Like, what have we been doing with ourselves and our time? Like, because they have no earthly idea what the fuck is happening around them.
It's like, you know, Kota wasn't lying about the beat writers not being involved. He's like, you serious?
It is very much an episode, not only for Jonichi, but for both of them, about how, more for Jonichi than Oren, but, about how everyone else is just moving on. Like, the whole beat writers thing really isn't a competition anymore. It's just people dancing, and Jonichi's kind of stuck still thinking that things are the way they were.
Yeah.
So now that everything has changed, he just kind of doesn't really have a place.
Like, I hope it leads to them being in the show more now. Just because, if not leads to them, because I like those two designs. The Bravo and the Greedon.
You know, Brian mentioned it when I was sort of trying to ask you guys with the spoiler-free whether it resolves them at all, what they're going to do, and he mentioned whether they might straighten up and join forces with Gaim. I'm not sure about long-term or if maybe it's like a last minute in the final battle or a certain battle they join in, but I think it would be interesting if those two were in his corner. Since I was also going to bring up that there was sort of like a lesser theme this week of Kota sort of feeling alone in terms of fighting. He mentioned that everyone, like, he's like, Michi's just fucking annoyed with me. Have you seen that dude's face? And he's just kind of talking about how everyone kind of has their own thing, and he's kind of fighting alone, and he's not sure if he can do it. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because he has grown a lot and gotten really powerful, but I think he kind of realized, like, oh shit, I'm Batman in this shit. Like, before Robin, I got nothing. I just got some flags on my back and a DJ gun and a PS2.
The whole Michi being annoyed with him thing is one of the big reasons why I'm looking forward to next week, because of the preview we got shows that Kota is hold my something and Michi really doesn't like it.
Yeah.
So it does seem like that whole if anyone takes away her happiness, I'll kill them kind of thing is actually going to come into play. And not to mention, you know, last week and this week, and even to a certain extent, some of the episodes before, Michi has gotten progressively more annoyed with Kota as time has gone on, to the point where he is starting to be more verbal about it, and he isn't quite as nice to Kota as he was. He has started to seem far more just impatient with him.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like that's definitely going to start to come to a head soon.
Here's Kota going, have you seen him? He's gone full on creeper. He might rape me.
I think like over the past few months, like you kind of noticed that Michi really underestimated Kota. Because I think he just saw him as his dumb friend that happened to get a driver, so he's manipulating. He thought he could manipulate him, but like every time he tried to manipulate him or discourage him, Kota would just come up and blow something up. So I think that's, you know, it's just all building up. And, you know, based on the preview and just thinking about it, I also think he's kind of annoyed that Kota always seems to be the hero to Mai, and he kind of wants to be the hero to her or you know, protect her. And just Kota's just always there doing something, and I think he just wants Kota out of the way.
Michi wants that pussy. That's all it is.
But it'll be really interesting to see that blow up, because, you know, so many secrets and relationships and all that have come out. But the Michi Kota thing has been going on probably the longest. Like, we're about halfway through now, and there's, even though there's that tension building now, there's still sort of the, hey, we're friends, he doesn't know he's working for Yggdrasil thing. So it's going to be really interesting whether it happens directly in the next episode or not. It'll be interesting to see that blow up.
I was totes happy to see Knuckle.
Oh, yeah, he popped up again.
Yeah, just because we haven't seen him in so long.
A couple times, but
I was actually thinking about Knuckle the other day, too, about that, like, we haven't seen him. And then he showed up here, and I was like, oh, all right then.
When they de-transformed, I almost forgot, like, because he looks so much like Baron from a distance, because, like, him and Michi were talking, so the camera was sort of blurred, and he's got that same, like, trench coat. I'm like, he's just, like, a copy of Baron to take his role while Baron's off, you know, hunting in the forest to find strong
opponents. Baron's off trying to meet the presenters.
Oh, we did get that scene with DJ Sagara talking
really
to the Energy Riders.
That I like how they're fantastic.
Like, I like how they said it's not even his real name. I'm like, you really thought his name was DJ? Like, you put that in the database, it's not going to pop up.
I just like how they're walking down the hall and they're loudly talking about how they just don't know anything about him and how he's betrayed them all. And then they walk into the room and he's just like, sup?
He's like a Bond villain. He's like, I'm a boss. Spins around in the chair like, hey, what's up, bitches? Like, oh, shit.
And then when Sid's like, who are you? And he just looks at him and disappears as a hologram. For whatever reason, it reminded me of that scene where Robert California is like, you don't even know me. I'm the fucking Lizard King. It's like, what the fuck? Robert California. But yeah, and he's sort of... I couldn't tell whether he was being completely honest with them about exactly what Helheim's about or if he was just messing with them.
I don't know.
Because it seemed like he was describing it, but then he said, yep, that's exactly what it is. You guessed it. It seems sort of sarcastic.
I feel like there might be some truth to it.
I hope so, just because I think it sounds cool.
There is that whole idea that maybe he is kind of messing with them kind of thing, but at the same time, he did mention that he's not really looking to be biased.
Yeah.
Towards any one side, but again, that could be him messing with them, so...
Because, like, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It just seems like, you know, when he seems like such a nicer guy when he's talking to Coda, which could all be part of the game, and it seems more like he's actually giving him actual advice, but this one, like I said, just the way he said things, like, you guessed it, Ryoma, you're so smart. Like, it seemed so sarcastic.
Ryoma. Like, he just seems to like, he actually genuinely likes Coda. As opposed to, like, I almost like he's just like, God damn it, Ryoma, you're a fucking idiot. Go away.
But then it could turn into him actually working with both of them and just acting differently around them.
Yeah.
Playing both sides.
I got the feeling from this that if what he said is true and that, you know, the myths of, you know, all these different fruits like the golden apple and ambrosia, and stuff like that is true.
All these different fruits, all those gay guys.
Then,
God damn it, Kevin.
Yeah.
yeah.
But, I think it's trying to hint that maybe he was one of the ones that, you know, ate the fruit prior. It does kind of feel like from there that maybe he's trying to urge Coda towards that goal.
Yeah,
I'm not entirely sure. Who knows? But
well, and you know, if he is some form of one of the overseers, or is that what they're called? Overlords. That's fair. There you go. We talked about how maybe he was from the Pottery Clan or one of the other worlds, but the way they talked about, you know, the Helheim Forest kind of crossing over with Earth several times, he could be from here, and he might have just happened to
from the send. Future.
But they definitely future. If the apple part is true, at least if we sort of know why they haven't used it for any writer yet. So
yeah,
it's really interesting. It's kind of funny that we have most episode when you think about it, like when I'm trying to remember it, I focused so much on all the crazy Orin Joichi stuff, but then I forgot there was that scene, which was a pretty good scene of, you know, DJ Cigar confronting them and sort of explaining things.
Yeah,
not explaining them.
So then, does that mean that we could still get Apple, the mascot of all fruit?
I don't know if it'll be like as a writer, but I think it's going to come up.
Yeah.
Like my penis.
We also got the scene between Coda and Baron, which I actually forgot until I rewatched the episode. Not a lot happened. They were just kind of talking back and forth about the overlords. Which, next week we're also getting Baron's new form, which is just...
Baron Lemon Arms.
Jinba Lemon. Or next it's just Lemon Energy, because he doesn't Jinba it up.
Because they just made that form for him, all of a sudden.
Yeah, I was going to say...
They made it last week.
I read that he wasn't initially going to get a power-up like that. But his popularity kind of led them to giving him the Lemon Arms.
So that's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it works, because he just keeps the same look. So technically, if he's isn't he using just a Genesis driver and a Lemon Core? Wouldn't he just be Duke then? But it keeps Baron's aesthetics.
Yeah, it doesn't work like it's supposed to, because it wasn't planned.
Yeah.
So they just
plus, he's got a different crest on his chest, too.
Yeah.
He's got the Baron's.
You know, something I was thinking about, which I don't even, it's not related necessarily to the episode, or I don't know if it'll happen, but because I got my Shin Zangetsu figure, and I was thinking, you know, since they have those mass-produced Sengoku drivers, I wonder if anyone's ever going to use, like, a Zangetsu suit. Since we hardly ever got to see it, because I was thinking, like, man, this guy was, like, billed as, like, one of the starring things, and he appeared, like, for, like, an airtime of 7 minutes total or something, and then he got an upgrade and is never seen again. I'm like, I wonder if somebody could use this.
I don't know.
I never know.
Well, that was strange.
Like, it hasn't happened before.
I think that puts a cap on this conversation.
Plus, yep.
I feel like that's not the first or last time that I've said that.
It's going to be a new thing.
Because now it's time for the jingle don't really fit anymore.
Just.
Power Rangers Megaphone.
Super.
Brian's doing my job.
Say pooper.
Super. Super pooper.
Pooper Megaforce.
I'm a super pooper.
That's a pooper mega win.
Super.
Samurai Forever. Haven't done that in a long time.
Okay, so this is Silver Lining Part 2. Where we learn Orion's backstory. Hooray!
Hooray for backstory.
Long story short, he is from the planet Ambrosia.
Ambrosia.
It's a reference to Gaim.
Yeah, clearly. He was a lonely little miner.
I was going to say, long story short, miners not miners. That pretty much sums it up.
For some reason, the Morpher was on his planet. He found it. He kept it a secret. And then the Armada came in and blew everything up. And he's like, oh, what am I fighting for? And then he learned how to hunt, apparently, and then decided to Davy and Goliath the Armada ship and then commandeered it, fixed it, and flew to Earth. And that was basically the episode.
True story. I actually really liked
it. There wasn't a lot of fights, therefore it sucked.
I was surprised about how much time that they actually spent on it. Like, I thought that it would just be quick exposition, but I was surprised at the amount of flashbacks. Like, it was most of the episode. I was very impressed with that.
Yeah. They had actual backstory on this character.
Orion himself had more backstory than any of the Megaforce Rangers.
And we had them for two seasons.
Orion's got more backstory than Gosei does.
He has more backstory than the entire original cast of MMPR. I'm just saying, they were never fleshed out. They had a lot of episodes, but nothing ever happened to them.
He has more backstory than Jesus.
So, I know, I actually really, really liked this episode for a number of different reasons. One, we got a backstory, which is, I think is fantastic. He could have just came and said, I'm from Ambrosia, and it got destroyed. Yeah. And that was it. But we actually got a very fleshed out backstory and a valid reason on why he wants to fight.
Has that wardrobe. Oh.
I don't ask me where he got like a shredded up dress shirt and nice pants from. I don't know.
Miner town.
But
old timey miners.
One thing I actually really liked about this episode, and it's really stupid, but I really liked that shopping scene.
Yeah, that was
funny. It's really stupid because it's one of those silly things that doesn't really matter. But I think that's one of the things I really miss about PR. I've said this a couple times. I miss story elements that aren't based around them fighting. Because, I mean, I'm watching Time Force right now, and there's several episodes in which they're just doing shit. And I miss that. We're in such a condensed format with the show that it's just like opening monster attacks that might relate to something that the Rangers talking about at the time, and fight and win, Megazord fight, win again, done. And so you rip my chair, I will fucking punt you across the room.
I'm sorry.
I do not support animal abuse.
Yes, he does. just like Dawson does.
But no, I really want to see more of that. And
I thought the two-parter overall was well done.
Oh yeah, I mean, together as a whole, they did a really good job on that.
Like, I saw a lot of people saying after this part aired that it was rushed as hell. I'm like, They had a whole first part where you saw him like none. It was like I was surprised they did that considering the condensed format that they had a whole episode where
he was a nun.
It was like a mystery. Like you didn't see him at all until the very. I like that they actually took the time to do that. So I don't know. They're talking about Rush.
He had the black habit on. He talked to Whoopi.
We're moving past it.
McGonagall.
We're moving past it.
Catherine and Jimmy was there.
But I was very impressed with it. Obviously, there's some sort of plot. Damn it! There's some plot holes. Like, you know, why is the morpher there? I like that, you know, I don't know if it was intentional, but where it was frozen, and they see that you see the key, it did kind of remind you of Zane being frozen.
Yeah.
No idea if that was intentional, but because it was the Silver Ranger, it also worked, and with the whole Six Ranger thing, intentional or not, it worked out nicely.
Yeah.
And people were flipping out being like, I can't believe they're ruining Q-Rex by making it this new one. You're watching Time Force. The Q-Rex was a prototype, so I'm going to assume this is the new version, and Time Force, you know, we saw they communicated with Wes, so in my headcanon, they know of this war that's going down, so they just send it from the future to help. That's my headcanon,
because
it makes
sense. It makes so much sense to me, because Gojujin came from the future anyway.
Yeah.
They Every have single episode of Gokaiger, he came from the future. And, like, I guess people forget that or something. It's very, very, like you just said, easy to just headcanon it up and say that it is a new version of the Q-Rex developed in 3014, if we're using present dates, I think we are. And they're like, here's a new one. It can transform and stuff, and it works off of
your keys. Because it was a prototype.
Because we know about this because we're from the fucking future. Like, it's a really easy thing to write off, and people get in such a fit over everything not being explained.
Yeah.
Well, and I didn't remember the Q-Rex being a prototype, but
yeah,
I haven't seen Time Force in a while.
It was a prototype for the entire Time Force system.
Wasn't the Morpher was, too, because wasn't it supposed to be an upgraded Red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a prototype Red.
Yeah, I remember that part, the Morpher being a prototype.
Like, you know what we do with prototypes? We send them back to prehistoric times, because that's fun. Yeah, because I remember that being a prototype.
But see, and actually, until Brian just said it, I'd forgotten that the thing came from the future all the time. But they showed it, but they didn't really always show it every time.
Yeah, because
and so that's I guess that's why people tend to forget. Plus, they just have this like cloudy vision when it comes to Gokaiger.
But it's the best. They know that much.
It is. It has to
be. But they don't remember anything from it significant. Other than, oh, fuck, they took out the Gold Ranger joke. This episode sucks.
Hold like, on. About that. Oh.
And the Silver Team.
There's so many fucking people were flipping a goddamn shit because they didn't use the Gold Ranger joke.
What was the Gold Ranger joke?
Yeah.
It was because Marvelous said, let's use the guys with the kanji on our heads or whatever. I don't remember the line. And so guy's like, okay. And he changed into King Ranger. And he's like, oh shit.
Yeah. Cause this one, he's distinctly said, let's go samurai. So, yeah. And then the silver change wouldn't have worked because of the Robo Knight of it all.
Right. And so they would have needed to green screen over that footage. And then the Gold Ranger joke didn't work. And the episode was so focused on the beginning with his backstory that the entire fight scene was rather rushed. It was easier just to chop it all off.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that at all, because like I said, I want to see more exposition in the show. And that's what a majority of this episode was, and that's why I liked it so much. And I don't care that it was a very clever joke in Gokaiger that does not translate whatsoever. Other than them both being gold.
That Except King Ranger's not really gold once you get to actual Gold Rangers that are completely gold.
Yeah. King Ranger's basically only a Gold Ranger to us.
Yeah.
I think he's classified under black in Japan.
He is. The key does a black coloring.
Yeah, and the weapons and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Because when you get to like Shinken Gold and Gohan Gold and then Beat Buster, especially Gohan Gold, man, that guy's bright.
Bitch be shiny.
He's so sparkly. Thanks, Emily.
There was so much complaining about this episode, and I don't get it. I thought it was for what we've been getting With these newer seasons, I thought it was probably one of the better episodes that they've made since Samurai started.
Yeah, and, you know, out of all the complaints I see around, the only one that I don't necessarily agree with, but I line up on, is I would like to know exactly what the Morpher came from.
Yeah, and but, like, that could get fleshed out in the future. I'm not expecting it to. But
if
I
not,
would...
my headcanon, it all would come from Time Force. Sure, why not?
Time Force sent it there so that he would find it and go help them.
Because everything else, the Q-Rex is easily explained. The lack of Sentai footage is a good thing. And I really didn't have a problem with them not explaining the new powers via this episode. I bet they didn't even cross their...
You could also go with Zordon dropped it there.
Yeah. I bet they didn't even cross their minds, the potential of explaining new powers. So I'm not upset about that. And I'm not upset about him not being from Mirinoi or KO-35 because it upsets people. And that makes me happy. Because there are other planets.
Why is he from Mirinoi? Why can't he be from a new planet?
There's other planets.
I like that he's just mowed.
Yeah.
I like that he's from a new planet because then it just, like, to me, it gives you that option of making, just saying, oh, look, all the new powers are from other planets. See, there's other planets with people. There's other planets that have morphers on them. Therefore,
that was established back in MMPR when the Alien Rangers showed up.
Well, yeah, but that there's more than just, like, Aquitar and Mirinoi. Like, that there's just a whole bunch of these places that is not just confined to the couple we've seen.
You know, it is kind of a sad backstory, too, because as far as we know, his whole planet's gone. I just hope that it's not, like, reversed at the end, like Doggy Kruger's wife and Tizon's girlfriend, where they're like, oh, whoops, we had all billion of your people behind this door. Lol, we had them kidnapped, they're fine.
Yeah, there were explosions and fire, so I think they pretty dead.
I hope that doesn't happen, because that's a lot of people to hide. I mean, maybe they'll find a few survivors or something, but I hope they don't reverse it, just because that tends to take out of the backstory's meaning. When it's like, oh, Flurious had her the whole time. Why is Flurious even in Super Mega Force?
Now, did they say everyone? He always mentioned his village. Did everyone on the planet except him get fucked over?
I'm going to assume so.
That's kind of how it sounded.
I figure if there was anyone alive, he would have went and found them.
Yeah, and he just stayed on that one beach and twirled a pole around a few times and then said, I'm trained.
Well, that's what I do.
You know, and then one last little thing is he didn't get a morph sequence, which I actually didn't notice, but I did like that sort of instamorph when he first morphed on the planet. I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. It looked neat, but I didn't even notice he didn't get his own morphing sequence.
No, they'll probably give him one next week or something, like next week, but then after the, because we're on a hiatus, after the hiatus, they'll probably get one.
Was it this episode or the last one we got the Megaforce morph padding? Like the regular Megaforce morph? Which one was it?
Oh, I think it was the last one.
I forgot to mention that then. Yeah, I thought that was funny.
I just remembered you, now that you said it. Yeah, that was annoying.
That was just random. Because, especially with it being the old powers.
Like, yeah, that kind of pissed me off, actually. Because I'm like, we don't need that. Like, we really don't. They didn't need to keep those suits to begin with, but...
They need extra time.
Yeah. They needed to take up another minute and a half of my life. I'll never get back.
I'm just looking forward to the new series, Power Rangers Blitz New Powers. It's going to be great. That was so clever. But yeah, it was a good way to end before the hiatus, now that they're trying to kill it, because all shows are... They're trying to kill Parks and Rec because the season finale is next week. Psh, it's over now.
Sky is falling.
Totally. But overall, the first half season hasn't been bad. I've enjoyed it more than hated it. It's had some pretty good episodes. These were pretty good. The Casey one was pretty good.
I mean, this one's
probably my favorite one. It's really just because of all this, like the actual story and like thought in it.
Mm-hmm. As a whole, I've liked Super Mega Force a lot more than Mega Force.
I've definitely liked it a lot more than I thought I would.
The thing is they could have made Megaforce pretty decent if they cut out a lot of the filler episodes they adapted and done more of the Ghost Ager story episodes and done a little setup for this season. It actually could have all been a fairly decent 2 years. But they just randomly decided to do so many of the filler episodes.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
Thanks, Gary.
Mei hates filler episodes.
Don't blame her.
Mei likes serialized television.
Just
I don't know why
Brian.
It makes it funnier when you like talk about your animals doing something. Like, if you just said, Brian likes serialized television, it's not funny. But when you say it about the cat, it seems funny because she's cute.
And because she's a cat.
Exactly.
She watched Gang with Me. I think she enjoyed it.
She did.
Oh, no, we saw. We're all on Twitter.
I share my animal escapades on Twitter all the time.
Yeah. New spinoff, Brian's Animal Escapades. If we save Greendale, Brian won't even get that spinoff. It'll be canceled after 6 episodes. Yep.
What?
In the butt.
Now it's time for Gallo in his corner stuff.
I thought this week was entertaining. There's not a ton to really go over, but
yeah, I don't got a whole lot. It was entertaining, and I was watching it, and one of the things that crossed my mind was the fact that even when Garo isn't at its peak in terms of like story or even like an interesting episode plot, it's still always a very beautiful show to watch.
Yeah.
I'll give it that at least.
Especially with the fight scenes, which definitely feel like a little bit of an improvement over last season. And I didn't really have too much of an issue last season with the fights, but this one, I don't know, it feels like Raiga is just, he's entertaining to watch. Possibly because he's, you know, such a show-off.
His style in this episode was, I think, a little bit less showy, but he still had those suave movements that just, like, are making his character. And I really enjoy that about him, because it really does set him apart. Because where Koga was very meticulous and strategic with his approach, and then Ryuga was just very like balls to the wall, just charge in.
And you could tell that Ryuga was a little more green than the others.
Yeah. And so it's always a really interesting thing to see what's essentially the same suit, barring slight design differences, act so differently.
Have there been a lot of design differences between this one and the original? I actually haven't noticed it.
Not a whole lot. I mean, obviously you had the color thing going on in Yami, but not anything huge. In fact, the actual suit in the show, I don't even think was really changed all that much. I know the Makai Kato figures changed quite a bit. but I think the suit in the show is pretty much the same design that we've been using. His Raiga's eyes are blue. Which is one difference. He has a different eye color. But other than that, I think it's pretty much identical to Koga's suit.
It is one thing about Garo that I do actually really like now that we're getting different main characters outside of Koga.
Yeah.
Where it's the same suit. It's the same, you know, basic powers, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's always interesting to see it from, you know, being used by different people. It really adds to the sort of lineage of Garo.
Right.
I'm trying to think.
Chime's being really loud today.
Yeah. Of course it would chime up now. I'm trying to think of what else in the episode there was.
We got the introduction of Crow.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot about him, other than I get, like, this weird feeling he's really two-faced. Like, not evil or anything, but he, like, when he's talking to them, like, he's just very, like, polite.
Yeah.
And then I feel like when he just kind of scampers off, he's, like, mischievous or something. I don't know. I could be completely wrong, but...
He seems like he could be slightly stuck up.
Uh-huh.
Like, it seemed almost like he was kind of bragging when he first met Raiga.
Yeah.
And then he realized that he was Garo, and it's like, oh, I probably should be addressing him so casually, kind of thing. Of course, to Raiga's credit, he, despite being such a grandstander, is a very kind person.
Yeah.
He really doesn't come off as sort of snarky or show-offy as a person, like, interacting with other people, so...
Right.
He just seems really nice.
He does, and I... Like we mentioned last week, I really like how the fact that he takes after his parents so much that you can easily see the influences from both sides.
Yeah.
In his character, and I really like that, because sometimes you get characters that are written as... descendants of other characters, and like you don't really see any of those traits. And I mean, sometimes you could have like a kind-hearted father and mother, and then you end up with some brat of a kid. I mean, that happens. But in cases like these in fiction, it's always nice to see the child actually be a nice balance between the parents, and they pulled that off really well.
Yeah, they did. It's funny because the two, Koga and Raiga, they don't necessarily look the same. The actors don't really look that similar. But every time I see Raiga walking around in his big long white coat, I keep expecting Koga. I don't know why that is. Like, I can't get that out of my head. Like, I keep expecting to see him. It probably is just with the way he dresses, but... Like, I keep expecting him to turn around and have that stern sort of look on his face, but instead he's just got this big grin.
He's always so genuinely happy to just kind of run around and defeat things. Speaking of the horror... for this episode was a thing.
Yeah,
I was expecting some boobage and it never happened.
Honestly, I was too.
I looked at it, I was like, you're gonna be naked at some point, and no, never happened. Which I'm fine with.
She didn't have a suit this time around. She was more of just a big CGI monster once she kinda finally revealed that form, but
yeah.
It was a weird approach. Like, Garo's always kind of played on the, I guess, sins of mankind, like their greed and stuff like that.
Right.
This was a weird one, because she just kind of disguised herself as trash and then popped out whenever people would be mean to the trash.
Trash, and a vending machine... And a crane bulldozer thing.
It admittedly, though, it only appeared on screen for like a couple of seconds. When she turned the crane into like a spider crane, so it just has all of its legs, but they're just the crane arms. I thought that would have been really awesome to see as a fight, then it just morphed into a black spider kind of thing. But I just thought that was really cool.
It would have been. And it was funny because I was having, like, weird K-Tai flashbacks. And I'm like, they've done this before. But, yeah, there was that. We didn't really get a whole lot about Mayuri in this episode. It was...
Yeah.
We got why her name is Mayuri, and that was...
She's a Makai instrument, Yuri type, or something like that.
Which is raised flags. I didn't know what they meant by that.
But yeah, and then they're... it's kind of an obvious approach. You know, she looks like human, so obviously Reg is going to treat her like a human kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas everyone else doesn't really see her that way.
And I mentioned this on Twitter, but it really is a big role reversal from the first season.
It is.
Because we're going to have this long story about how Raiga is trying to kind of humanize Miyuri. And essentially in the first series, it was all about Kaori trying to humanize Koga.
Yeah.
Because Koga's just running around with a stick up his butt.
That's, I mean, it's an interesting approach. It does fall maybe a little too similar to the first plot, but I mean, that's something we'll have to wait and see, because right. It can definitely, you know, shift out of that as time goes on. You mentioned the episode yesterday, and you mentioned how they killed another one of those nine horrors. And it's like, there's only nine of them, so I wonder how long this is going to go on. Because there's nine, and then there's one of them is carrying the seed of another. So that's 10. And I guess you can sort of like insert other horrors that aren't connected to this nine in between all of that, and maybe go off on a different plot once the seed is found and maybe resurrected. But yeah, it did kind of limit itself. So I am curious to see how many episodes we get, because we haven't really gotten a episode count yet.
Right. If we're sticking in like mid 30s, I would estimate that the remaining seven would hopefully be scattered around a little more. Maybe a couple horrors that aren't related to the tablet.
You mean mid 20s?
Is that what I said? Or what did I say? 30s?
30s. I'm like, no Garo series has gone that long.
Yeah, that's even 20s. And so, I mean, we have seven left. That would put us at episode 9 if they were knocking them off one each. But I have the feeling a couple of them could stretch out into two-parter kind of things.
Plus, they did bring up that if they don't, I guess, purge the crystals that they turn into, if they don't do that, then they will just resurrect. So that could also open up maybe a plot down the line where one of them doesn't get completely, you know, purged of its horror-ness and it resurracts or something. So
or they like lose it. Someone steals it. You steal and run away. Try to sell it as a shark tooth in a souvenir stand. I don't know what I'm doing.
Right, it's an interesting approach.
you know it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see which routes they take and how long that this show actually ends up. But I get the feeling it'll probably be mid-20s like all the other Garo series, give or take.
Yeah. yep. Unfortunately, we are still kind of like having a bit of shorter discussions for Garo. But it is just episode 2, so we don't tend to have a lot more to say until we really get into the thick of it. So
yeah, you need to at least get to about 8 or 9 or so before we just really start wrapping up the discussion. We'll wrap up the discussion when they wrap up the plot
and the tits.
Yeah, that'll really get us going.
We. Oh, God.
Those are perky and not disgusting.
I think that's a good point to move on.
Because now it's time for Ramble time.
Sneak Attack Edition. We didn't even know we were here. Speaking of Pokemon, I don't remember what it was about this week, but I remember thinking it was really stupid. Exactly. This week, the gang discussed Pokemon. Here's a sneak preview.
I wasn't paying attention for most of the episode. I got bored.
Because he's like, Ash, if I beat you, you're going to teach children. He's like, fuck no.
There was children, and I didn't like it.
And Serena was like, no, don't take my Ash. She can't teach preschoolers. She has to teach me or something.
She's like, I want that Ash dick. And Ash is like, oh, Serena. I'm not into girls.
And then they beat Team Rocket. I'm assuming Team Rocket showed up. There's no way they didn't show up. What is this, Unova? But yeah, I don't remember that much because I missed it for like the first time live in a while, and I DVR'd it, and it just kind of had it on the background. I remember thinking, this is stupid.
I just remember Sylveon, so that's what made me happy. I'm pretty simple.
I just remember children, which made me upset.
Children are the worst.
Well, speaking of stupid things, Ben 10.
Oh, it was another one of those stupid Wedding Bride episodes. Except
didn't Omniverse do this like 3 times already?
This is at least the 3rd time. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't like them. But no, there's been.
Don't get me wrong, no, I hate these fucking things.
No, but there's been some amusing bits in them. And I liked seeing Bullfrag in this one because we haven't seen him in a while.
I do like Bullfrag.
We haven't seen him since he premiered, have we?
No, because I think we've only seen him in the opening with his new outfit. But this is like the trio monsters that followed the Blue Ranger around and Die Ranger. That's these episodes. That's what it reminds me of.
I'll get that joke eventually.
And, they're just... I can't believe how many of them they've done. And I don't even remember that cat bitch. Was she in an episode before?
Yeah, she was the one.
I was...
They were in the underground...
they're always in the underground.
They're stretchy. You know what they look like.
Those people, like the chicken.
Oh no, not her. The cat controlling.
Yeah. She was in at least one episode, but it was very brief. It wasn't the focus. It was like at the beginning of the episode. They just captured her.
Okay.
That was it. That was the extent.
It's funny because I was wondering who she was too, and I was actually going to ask you.
I remember the underground chick. Because she was like in the episode where they were sort of on a date and he went accelerate and there were like hockey kids or something. Yeah. I don't know. She's been around a couple times. She was in the last one.
The cat lady was like a very minimal scene in an episode. It wasn't even the focus of one.
So it's hard to even remember her. But there was some entertaining parts. I mean, I thought it was kind of funny him having to switch back and forth between those 3 forms.
We got a lot of wrath and that's always good.
Yeah. I love how he said, let me tell you something, after he de-transformed. He's like, wait a minute, I'm not Wrath.
It's just the whole episode was basically, girl gotta get her man kind of thing. Like, it's...
90s episode, are you here?
what else was I going to say? This is not really related to... how the episode was bad or anything, but has the Tetraman princess always had that like weird alien echoey thing to her voice? It seemed off this episode. I don't know why.
I didn't notice anything different. Like, I can't even like think about what she sounded like right now, but I didn't notice anything different at the time.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to even think. I know she sounds like a transvestite, but.
And you know about that.
I think I would have noticed. Maybe it's just been so long since her last episode where she fought over Ben. I think in the last episode they had that one like robot thing that's like a giant dome robot. I don't remember its name, but it's got like an accent. This is a great description. It's a dome robot and it's got an accent.
Oh yeah,
it likes Brooke, I think.
No, I know what you're talking about. That yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Faustina? No.
I can't tell if he's being sarcastic or not.
No, I know exactly. I'm now picturing exactly what you're talking about.
Fantasia.
Motherfucker.
Anyway, this episode was pretty pointless. I mean, I hope they don't do very many more of these. I don't know what the next episode's about, but I think around now it was supposed to be the Ben all Ben's episode, but like I said, they're pushing him. Kiefer did bring up something in his... Oh, sorry, excuse me. Kiefer did bring up something
his
review of the podcast about like what we thought of if Ben would be too overpowered if he was actually proficient at the Omnitrix. He is pretty overpowered when you think about it, considering all he can do, and he's got an alien that can just erase you from existence. But, you know, the solution to that is just to come up with better threats. Like, in the last series, something like Aggregor, Ben was pretty powerful at that time. I mean, he pretty much transformed exactly what he wanted to, and he had ultimate transformations, but Aggregor kicked his ass pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And Kevin, too. He never beat Kevin. I mean, like, he did, because he echoed him down, but he had a pretty hard time beating him.
You could definitely balance it out by just Ben's normal attitude towards things. Like, he's always going to want to go for the big brute guy and not really think about it too intelligently.
Yeah.
He likes to.
Of course, when he does, then he tends to be, overpowered. But, you know, he tends to be more of the Russian of things kind of kid.
Yeah. But I think it makes for some entertaining matches. Like, you know, when he's sort of inexperienced, like particularly in the original series, it was fun to see him like accidentally transform into like Stinkfly or something. And then you have to see how he has to figure out how to win this battle with Stinkfly's skill set, which was interesting. But I also thought there was some really entertaining battles in Alien Force and Ultimate Alien, just seeing him quick change and, you know, seamlessly flow between powers. It kind of made some really awesome looking fights. I'd like to just see there be a little bit of a balance, because it just seems ridiculous that after all the time he's had it, he's like, oh, I don't know what to do. Whoops, I guess I'm Gray Matter. I guess I can't just change it by pressing the button like I always have. And he also hasn't unlocked everything. And they could play with the time limit a little bit more. They could have done that and still had him be proficient at switching between and actually using the aliens, but had the time limit enforced more.
Yeah. And wasn't it a thing at some point that when he did do all of those quick changes, it actually timed it out quicker because he was using up more energy?
It ran the battery down or the charge down or whatever. And that's also, you know, a limitation.
Huh, so I think I was right. It is Festina.
Okay. It's real. But yeah, there's definitely ways to balance it out with like the time limit and the energy draining and just having more powerful enemies, because I'd kind of like to see some fights in the future where he's got some really strong enemies. Like, fights between him and Albedo could be really fun with how fast they can change. So, yeah, I think that there's always ways to work around that. I mean, look at Superman, who's pretty much overpowered for everybody, and they seem to have been able to write him all these years.
Well, they haven't always written him well. But, yeah, Superman's always kind of really fluctuated in power. Like, he was really broken when they first started out because they just threw in whatever worked for the issue. And then, you know, they nerfed him a bit and then he got another increase, and he's been all over the place.
Yeah, I remember watching on because I have Justice League, those DVD sets. And when you watch it, like the special features, they get Bruce, Tim, and I forget the other producer they talk to.
Tim Bruce. Sitting,
your mother. Are sitting there, and they're like, yeah, it was actually really hard to do the show, because how do you make a threat that is, like, that Superman can't just, like, punch his way out of? Because you got, like, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, who are decidedly human, with weaknesses and are not they're practically immortal, and there's Superman, whose weakness is kryptonite, red sun. And they said, yeah, it was kind of difficult to just, you know, to do that every week and not like totally look like they were just like giving Superman like Kryptonian flu or something, you know. So, Superman's weak this week because he got a stomach virus from some bad seafood.
Kryptonian flu. Isn't his strength also dependent on the planet he's on? Because he's not as strong as he's on Krypton, isn't that right?
Well, yeah, because Krypton has a red sun.
So how could he beat Goku then? They're like, oh, Superman could beat Goku, but Goku's strength isn't dependent on what planet he's on. Goku's just fucking strong everywhere. So, because they were like, because Superman wins because he's as strong as he needs to be. Not if he's on Krypton. Goku whoop his ass then.
Shenanigans. Goku has to take him to a place with a red sun and Superman's just as human and frail as Dawson.
I mean, Goku doesn't even have a weakness. His weak death? Nope. He just comes back. He's like, bitch, just got a halo. I just got an accessory. That's all you did for me. But, because I always get annoyed at that matchup because, like, I can see it being an even match, but when I was watching Man of Steel the other day on HBO, and I was like, when he was on their ship and he started weakening, I'm like, wait, his strength is dependent on where he's at. And it's not Goku. I'm just getting on. I'm getting mad now. Just calm me down. Hold me back, coach. Hold me back. Nope. No coach. No coach references back in this episode.
No one likes him. No one likes Craig T. Nelson.
What? Nobody likes
Coach.
I don't know that reference. I only know one coach.
The TV show called Coach.
Christ.
I've never seen it. I don't know all TV.
Never seen Coach?
No.
Have you seen Blades of Glory?
Yes.
Craig T. Nelson is their coach.
Okay.
Speaking of Craig T. Nelson, there's a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Series out.
I don't know how that segues, but...
Called okay. Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc T. Nelson. No. So, yeah, Arc V? Is Arc V or Arc 5? I don't know.
I think it is supposed to be Arc 5.
Okay. I mean, because obviously it's standing for the 5 because it's the 5th series, but I didn't know how they said it.
I didn't get to see it yet, so I want to know if it's good.
I forgot about it, like, because it was in the back of my mind when I was watching 5Ds, and then somebody asked me about on Facebook, or on Ask FM, on Ask FM, and I was like, oh shit, I haven't watched that yet. So yeah. It was certainly an interesting animal.
They released a promo of it back in January. Not a promo, but like a sneak peek episode. But yeah, I had forgotten about it too until you mentioned it on Twitter. I really hadn't thought about it.
It was certainly interesting, wasn't it? It's in that Zexal style.
Yeah. It's definitely different from previous series. It's very, very colorful.
Yeah.
And I know Zale was very colorful as well, but this feels like way more.
Yeah.
Like someone's like high on PCP.
Like it's to the point where most of the characters, because of the way the duels sort of take place, dress like clowns and magicians and stuff.
Yeah. Because they're
like that's the kind of wardrobe that these people have. The main character's hair is green and red.
Yeah. It's Christmas hair. I like the idea of the duel arena, what they're called, the real duels or whatever they're called. I can't remember what they're called. I like the idea behind them. I just don't know if they're in the right series.
I do actually kind of like the concept. Basically what it is it's duels being done for entertainment, for the entertainment of a crowd. You know, it has less of a sportsy kind of feel to it and more of like a magician or a clown, like a
showmanship.
Yeah. It feels like people who are putting on a show, who are putting on like a play or something. Only
it's like the Pokemon contests.
Yeah. So all of their decks are themed around entertaining the audience more so than winning, I guess.
But the idea of the way the game's set up, like with the monsters and environments being actual solid, and like the idea of them being able to move around the field and find like advantage cards, I would actually really like to see that in a setting that's sort of different than this, because that could make for some really epic duels. It's kind of like the writing duels, in a way.
Well, I mean, who knows what kind of turn the series will take? Right now, it's super bright and colorful, like I said. I don't necessarily have too much of an issue. It is a series that is probably going to be difficult to watch if I ever have to marathon it.
Yeah.
Just because it does get to a point where it is kind of hard to look at. That said, I wasn't like disappointed or anything.
Yeah.
I don't dislike the episode at all. It wasn't what I was expecting out of it.
Yeah.
I can't remember the main character's name. I think it's Yuya.
Yeah, is it Yuya or Yuka? One of those. Like, the dad and son's name are very similar.
Yeah.
We'll just call him Yuya.
He is extraordinarily effeminate looking.
And he's like, got goggles.
If it wasn't for the fact that he has a male voice, they could have easily made this character female. Because he looks, like, way more effeminate than the previous main characters. And I don't say that as, like, in a bad way or anything. It's just, he has a very different look to him. That's kind of this series in a nutshell right now for me. It's, I don't have a problem with any of it. It's just, it's very different.
I'll probably stick with it for a while just to give us something to talk about and something to see. And then, you know, around wherever I stopped was Zexal. I think I stopped after 20 or something, but I'll give it a shot.
I'm still watching Zexal.
Like, since you're still watching it, does Yuma ever get to the point where he's now actually a competent duelist, or is the whole, I need Astral to make my decisions for me still a thing?
He's fairly competent.
He knows what he's doing a little more?
He's better, yeah.
Because I was going to bring up, like, how, well, at least the main character here, it was just the first episode, but he at least seemed competent. Like, he didn't seem like, what's his name? I just said his name, too.
Yuma.
From Zexal. Yuma, where he's like, oh, it's a card. I don't know. What do you do with it? Do you spread peanut butter with it? And that was an interesting change. I liked the idea of a rookie duelist because, well, you know, Yugi and Jaden and Yusei were all, like, super proficient.
I mean,
like, you're the chosen one. Sorry.
Even Yugi, like, normal Yugi without Yami.
Yeah, that's true.
Was just a normal duelist. He really wasn't, like, super great at it. It was, a lot of it came from having that other him inside of him. It sounded weird. But,
and Jaden didn't win all the time either.
And I was looking forward to how they would handle Yuma, but I don't know. It didn't feel like he was growing at all after a while. It just felt like Astral is sort of just directing him.
Astral, but, take the wheel.
The main character here, Yuya, who I'm going to get those two names mixed up so much, Yuma and Yuya. If I had one sort of little complaint, it was that they were, the other characters were talking back and forth about how typically Yuya is not super skilled and how he's sort of like headstrong and kind of rushes into it sort of thing, but he was changing himself. Normally, I don't have a problem with that. But it's the first episode, and you're just sort of explaining this to us.
Explain
so
the character.
So we're not actually seeing
one.
It. Our first look at this character is just him kicking ass in a duel.
Yeah, because he seemed very competent compared to Yuma, and he wasn't explaining rules to us. Well, it's a face down.
And
oh, no.
To its credit, the duel in this episode, it did look like it was just going to be Yuya trouncing the other guy, but it ended on a cliffhanger. Like,
because he got,
I was
the upper
surprised because it looked like Yuya had pulled out this master move and just completely won, but it turns out that he didn't. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that. Even from the get go, it seems like this is a little more challenging than just, hey, I'm the main character, win.
I pull cards out of my ass that do bullshit things in order to make myself win.
It's, like, insane, like, the effects. Like, because I remember when I played, like, there were so many cards that they used that I don't know how much of the game's changed because there's a lot more specific decks now, but there's so many cards that are made for such specific situations that you would look at and be like, I'm not going to put this in my deck because what are the odds that I'm going to go up against this person so many times? But they have, like, all those cards in their decks in the game. They're like, well, it says if my partner's name is Jim and he has red hair, then I win. So that's neat. I'm glad I put that in my deck.
I happened to meet Redhead Jim on the street today and decided to duel with him. So great.
I was actually kind of glad to see some of the older cards show up.
They had a bunch of Legend of Blue Eyes ones from the original sets. Yeah, from Legend of Blue Eyes, they were like in the advertisements. Like they had that Diane Keto the Cure Master like in an advertisement. so I thought that was pretty fun.
And the Swamp and Lava Beasts.
Oh yeah, the Swamp Battle Guard.
The enemy duelist had.
I remember
like
those.
Those were some of the first cards I ever got.
Yeah, those were Joey's.
They're that old. But
well, one was Joey's, one was Tristan's, and then Tristan gave him his and was like, "They're friends. You should take
BFF.
It."
And for a while, for most of the episode, they were pretty much just aside from sort of the dynamic of the duel, where it's them running around the terrain and whatnot. They really weren't pulling out any sort of new summoning. Kind of, I don't know what I'm looking for.
And
new ways to summon cards. Like, they really were just going, like, with the pretty straightforward, just normal rules. Like, I have two monsters, I sacrifice them to bring out another bigger monster.
They did have that pendulum and, summon at the end.
Yeah, that's...
You're a cat. Fucking cat got on top of my goddamn entertainment center again.
And, but yeah, I was going to mention that because for most of the episode, I was wondering whether or not they were actually going to have a new gimmick for this season, and then they pulled out the pendulum thing, and I'm like, I don't understand what this is, but okay.
It's pretty different. I'm glad at least at the moment it seems different than like all the other ones have seemingly just been a different form of fusion for me. Like, you know, Synchron Summoning. I mean, it was summoning a new monster essentially through a weird form of sacrifice, but it was all like that. Like, for whatever reason, you know, GX decided to put emphasis on fusion. 5Ds was Synchro, and Sexo was Xyz Summon or whatever. And
yeah.
So they all just seem very similar. Like, they just changed the color of the card. I mean, go ahead.
No, I was just going to comment on the Zexal thing.
Okay.
Because it's Xyz or something like that in the American release. I don't understand why they had to change it from Xyz.
Oh,
Xyz
yeah, that's
already
right.
An English word.
Yeah,
why not just use Xyz.
I knew it was something different. But at least that sort of had, because it was very similar to Synchro Summon. It's just instead of doing it from the field, you had to like line them up or something. Like you had to overlap them. This is different. You play patty cake with them, and then but at least they had like that different effect of like the overlay network. Like you got different effects depending on how many monsters you sacrifice for it. I mean, it wasn't that different, but at least it felt a smidge different. I'm pretty biased towards Synchro Summoning because I like that series a lot. But yeah, at least right now it seems different because they have those two like sort of scales, like they have at the very end, and you can summon monsters in between it. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens.
I was like, I didn't quite understand what was going on, like with the pendulum summon. I wasn't catching on to how it was actually working. I'm sure that'll change with more battles because it really was just sort of pulled out towards the end of the episode and just sort of used suddenly, but
he Heart of the Cards did, and then because it was like the cliffhanger part of it. So,
and there really wasn't an explanation for it. It was just kind of this: people know what a pendulum summon is, kind of thing. I guess I am a little bit used to Zale kind of hand holding you a bit.
Yeah, like wait, what? And, you know, I'm kind of curious, like, I don't want to sound like one of those people that be like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Got really kiddy, but, you know, Zexal and this series have a very distinct style to them.
Yeah.
And Zexal was a lot lighter. I mean, I know they have plot elements and they've had story arcs, but in between them, it was a lot lighter. And I'm just kind of curious, like, was 5Ds not well received to have them make a complete art style and sort of approach change to it? Because... But all three previous series, they're pretty different from each other when it comes to plot in a lot of ways, but they're all very sort of dramatic in a lot of ways, and a little bit too dramatic sometimes, and it had a very specific style to it, and they took a very different approach, like, because I don't follow Yu-Gi-Oh! Like I do Toku, where you hear something like, well, GoBusters toy sales didn't do well, so they went for Bright Dinosaurs with a gimmick, but I don't know the process.
Zale really did feel like just a complete 180 because it was both tone and aesthetic, because this they do look very different from the earlier stuff. So yeah, I am curious if 5Ds wasn't well received, or maybe they just really wanted to go a different route. Who knows?
But, yeah, I'm kind of curious. Maybe just to keep it fresh, but it just seemed like such a drastic thing, because especially after just recently watching 5Ds, and you know, there was obviously filler episodes. It was like a 180 episode series or whatever, but it was very serialized a lot of the time, and a lot of the series got like that, very convoluted and weird. There's time travel and other people and shadow realms, and it gets really strange. But
I know, and now I'm gonna forget his name. The guy who wrote Yu-Gi-Oh, the original Yu-Gi-Oh. I know he still has a hand in creating some of the monsters and the cards and stuff like that. I don't know how much of a hand he has in like actual design work.
Yeah.
So I am curious, like, if he does have like more of a hand in terms of design, if it's just because his art has changed as time has gone on, or
right, like
if it really
over.
Is just something they wanted to do differently.
Because I don't know much like about behind the scenes stuff. I think the last thing I read was that, you know, he did the original series, you know, when it became all about cards, and then he did GX, and then I read that he really didn't want to keep doing more, but they sort of convinced him, and he said if he did another one, he wanted it to be different, hence the motorcycles. That's what I read somewhere.
I know, because he originally wrote the manga, and he just stopped it after the first series. I mean, I don't believe he wrote any of the succeeding mangas. They're all written by different people.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I know he had a larger hand, at least until GX.
Yeah. Because I don't remember where I read it, but I just read that when he agreed to do whatever he did for 5Ds, he wanted to be different. So that's why we got all that stuff, which I really liked. And I'm just kind of curious, since I read that he didn't want to be involved and then agreed to do something different. Like, is he just continuing to be involved and wanting to do something different with each series? Or after that, he's like, fuck it, make it look like Beyblade. And then Zexal happened. I'll have to maybe look around a little bit, but I don't know exactly a part of that. But we'll see how this series goes. I hope it ends up at least holding my attention a little better than Zexal did.
We also, I think you brought it up just in passing, but the main character's like main cards that he's using are
hippos.
Like a pair of hippos and then a big tit dragon.
They're very, very strange. For some reason, I don't know why I thought the hippo wasn't going to be a card, but like some sort of companion. I don't know how that was going to work, but it is a card. And he rides it because they can ride monsters.
It's funny that he can, ride his cards around and stuff like that. But it seems so odd, because the hippos are very cartoony. And then you have them fighting like the lava and swamp monsters who are a little closer to the original style of the show.
it's funny, like the range of monsters, because you have stuff like the battle guards and the magicians that had this sort of ancient feel that all the original monsters had, and then you got like the hippos in this, and then you have ones that are just straight up like jets and stuff. So it's a huge range. The most normal looking monsters he had were the pendulum ones, which just look like white and black dark magicians, at least from what I've seen. But I'm kind of curious how his cards evolved throughout the show.
And I gotta say, he's got one of the lamest dragons. I mean, it's just called Odd Eyes Dragon or something like that.
Yeah.
And its theme is that it has two different colored eyes. And it's got two big balls on its chest, so it looks like Big Tit Dragon.
It's the natural progression from Blue Eyes White Dragon and Red Eyes Black Dragon. Odd Eyes Boob Dragon. This is when you really can't say they're running out of ideas. Oh man, oh my, that should be interesting. Yu-Gi-Oh, he's no longer the king of games. I'm also kind of, I know that they're, you know, setting these series on their own and they're nothing to do with any of the original shows, but I'm always kind of curious how far they are, you know, in the future from the original series or the series before it. Like, 5Ds was very much on its own, but it was in clearly in the same timeline. It was sometime later, you know, it was a Neo Domino City. But Zexal was just completely out of the way. And this one seems to be too. Dun, dun, dun. Oh. I think it's time to move on to... I don't think we have anything else for Ramble Time.
Yeah.
Nope. Let's just move on to Silence Corner.
Now it's time for a very brief Twitter questions of the week.
It's more like Twitter questions of the sometimes.
The jingle didn't get updated.
So we're working on this one. It'll be a challenge for us. we picked out a couple Twitter questions, and Aerosol will read them because I said so, and he picked them out himself like fruit.
I didn't pick them out, I just copied them down.
He just he waltzed into the market with his casual theme music and picked up the fruit.
Okay, so the first question is from Eagleardo, and he asks, what is your favorite Megazord cockpit design from Sentai or PR?
Obviously Lost Galaxy's amazing cockpit design, just worshipping daggers. They're like, oh, white background. Oh, that's an interesting one. I'm trying to run through all of them in my head. There's a few of them I can't even picture. The interior of it wasn't necessarily amazing to look at, but I really liked the whole idea of Mystic Force and Magirangers, of the sort of rotating game pieces. And it was kind of disturbing the way their bodies were cut off, but it was a very interesting way of representing it. And it was kind of neat. I liked the whole idea behind it.
Well, that one... It was more of a like an interpretation because they really weren't necessarily in a cockpit because they were the Zords themselves. So it was more just that they were fused together.
I'm not gonna.
I honestly tend to not really like the ones where people are just sort of standing in a room and doing things. Like, I love Kiryuger, but I wasn't a big fan of the cockpit design. It was just not really that interesting. And I do tend to like the more like tech based ones where, you know, if they're driving a car, it should look like they're driving a car. this is such a cop out answer, but I love Go Busters. I really love how they did the cockpit designs in that.
It was amazing.
Whoa.
Well, it is. I just like the fact the buddy rides become like the steering wheel, and it was integrated so well with the actual designs of the buddy rides too. And it just worked so well for that show and that design. Like, as much as I'm not a super fan of the mecha designs in Go Busters, I like them. They're not my favorite though, but the cockpit design in that show was really good.
It was pretty good. I liked the idea behind cats. behind like the Gokaidra one, like, you know, because it was sort of themed with their whole pirate thing. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not sure how much logical sense it makes that they would control each individual part with a, you know, a ship wheel, but oh, yeah. I like the effort of it.
Yeah, thinking back, some of them have been kind of odd. Like, I completely forgot about Mystic Force's cockpit design.
You know, just my favorite one is
just piece one
is from the alternate GoBusters from the movie that was just like twigs and like a jungle. That's clearly the best one of all time.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
I love how cramped the older ones were, like, in G-Ranger or Mega Ranger. Like, they're, like, so close together, and, like, yellow and pink always had, like, computers, and, like, I always wonder what they're doing. Like, they're playing Asteroids over there. Like, oh, put in the coordinates. Those keys don't even have symbols on them. They're just blank.
It's funny, because I was thinking back to some of those older ones, and trying to figure out whether or not some of them stood out to me, and then I realized they're all the same.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of theme, a lot of the older series just used very similar cockpits.
Yeah.
I
did like, I don't know if it's necessarily it's like a favorite, but I liked Ninja Storm or Hurricane Drew how they were still separate when they combined, just as a little bit of a change.
Yeah.
All, except when they did, like, I think the Super Combination had them all in one, if I remember. But, I mean, like, when they would do normal Storm Megazord, Thunder Megazord, stuff like that. I like that.
Was GoBuzz still separate?
Yeah, they were.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just want to make sure I wasn't nuts.
I am,
but that's a different story.
we've been watching Time Force lately, and I guess I had forgotten what the cockpit in that looked like.
There's like a bunch of staff standing up and they're standing over him.
Yeah.
Like they're at a concert singing.
Like it's almost the exact opposite of what I feel like it should be. Cause you know, they are a more tech based team. You'd think their cockpit would be the same. But
yeah, but the future technologies allows you to grasp a rod and then it knows what you want to do. You know what I mean? Wow. No, but yeah, I see what you mean. But at least it would be even weirder if it was like an ancient interior, but it's definitely very bare. It's just, and they can pull them out though and do the sword slash, which is cool, I guess. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of the Wild Force one because they just, or at least the first part of it, they just put down their little crystal sabers and like hovered their hands over it, kind of like a Lost Galaxy style, but I preferred that to when they got the Soul Bird, just because the Soul Bird, it looked like they had moved that Soul Bird into their garage, and then like the jerk never moved it out. Like, that's what it looked like. Like, somebody stored it in their Megazord and never came to pick it up, because it looked like they were crowded out. They're like huddled around the Soul Bird, like hunching over, like, let's get him. All right, hold on. I'm caught. My leg's caught. Like, this fucking asshole parked his Soul Bird. And he's like,
dude, where's my Soul Bird?
Like, it invaded their cockpit. Oh god.
Oh my god, it does. I love that.
Like, I thought it was very awkward. Like, it was never amazing before, but I much preferred it to them being crowded out by a Soul Bird. I want a car that just drives that looks like a Soul Bird.
Okay. So our next question is from Powerman 293, and he asks, do you guys have any translated / subtitled toku pet peeves? Mine is when they change the names of characters for no reason, like Ren to Ron, or their Japanese people just leave their names as is. Assholes.
Or Greedon to Ornak.
Yeah, I need to mention that one, like, right off the bat. Like, what gets me most of the time is things that Overtime does. Changing Greedon to Ornak. Like, I get it, it's the same exact joke. But, I mean,
that's just not his name.
That's his name, so I feel like it's just kind of silly. There's a couple other instances. I mean, like, when they changed the Sengoku driver to the Warring driver. And then they went as far as to change Ryoma's name to Warring, too.
It's like his name's Warren, but they didn't do it right.
Like, I think that's a stretch. I agree with him in the fact that when it is, like, a character or, like, a name of, I mean, in this case, the name of a rider, you don't see it too much in pop-up and Sentai, but, yeah. Like, the name of a rider and stuff like that, I wouldn't translated, it just doesn't really
typically
make sense to.
Typically, I would say leave the proper nouns alone, like,
yeah.
Names. Well, the only exception I would have in that is like attack names.
Yeah,
I remember for Shinkenger, I think Overtime released like one episode of Shinkenger or like one of the movies or something, and they changed a couple of things around, and it was like, you know, I can kind of understand that because it is really dense Japanese.
Like, I'm either way on that. Like, it doesn't bother me if the attacks are left untranslated. or if they translate them, it really doesn't affect me too much either way. Whatever works. Go ahead.
I was saying, my pet peeve is, like, I don't remember how often it actually happened in, like, something like the O's subs, but, like, on the box for, like, Taja Dole, it's Condol instead of Condor. Like, they're using our language. Why don't they it's the people will be like, well, that's how they do it, so that's what's proper. I'm like, no, Condor is not spelled like that. If you're going to use our word, just use it correctly.
We have Condol. We have the ever-popular La Torartar. that was the best.
I always get thrown off a little, and this doesn't happen that often, but when a character will say something that is in English and it will be translated differently, it happens very seldom, but it does happen, and it always kind of throws me off because I know what they're saying. It's just, it then shows up on the screen. It's like, that's not right.
There's sometimes like when a character says like thank you and then they subtitle it as thanks. And I mean, that's very minimal, but it's something your brain catches. Another thing that bothers me sometimes, and it's just an audio visual thing, is that if they say like Nissan or Nason, and then they put the character's name in there.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of saying, like, sister or brother or whatever, that always trips me.
I've seen, like, all three.
I hear the word, and I know what it means, but then the subtitle is saying something different, and so I get a little messed up.
I've seen, like, all three versions. Like, well, they'll put the character's name, sometimes they'll just translate it to brother, and then sometimes they'll just write it as Nissan, which I'm fine with that version, because
I get that they're trying to localize it, and, you know, here in English-speaking countries, we don't really refer to our siblings as brother and sister when we're talking to them. We just say their names. But, I don't know, I think there are easier, or not necessarily easier, but there are maybe better methods of going about it. Like, have Nosan refer to his sister as sis. You know, people do actually do that.
Yeah.
I mean, most people aren't going to be like, oh, sister, hello. They'll be like, oh, hey, sis, what's up?
It's shaken. It's 90s Aristotle Returns again. I think it's funny when you think about it, like how their sentences are arranged differently. In that sense, kind of like one of the common things is when someone's talking to a group of people and they'll say, like, whoever, like, the main person they're talking to, will be like, Haruto, Mina! And then, like, we would just say, come on, guys. But they, like, specifically single out one person and then say, Mina. And I just think it's funny, like, when it's translated or if, like, an English person would say that, it would be like, Kevin and everyone, let's go! It would be like that blonde bitch that got fired for being like, we did it together, everyone, together, yes, you're fired. And she was never seen again. She
with
literally
teamwork,
wasn't.
We did it with everyone.
The black guy was still my favorite. Oh, my favorite, best character, Mega Ranger. But yeah, there's some funny stuff.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned to you guys before, the subs I watched for 5Ds were hilarious. Like, I could sort of tell they weren't the best subs. I mean, they were perfectly fine for what I watched them, but I actually was entertained by some of the liberties they took. Like, you know, when they said Nani, it translated as WTF. And there was that screenshot I took where one of the guys from Team Ragnarok was talking about how Yusei is about to jizz in his pants. I'm sure he didn't say anything like that. It was probably something like, you know, he's going to be scared. Maybe he's pee his pants, maybe, because they were just talking about how he's going to be, you know, intimidated by whatever was about to happen. But, like, the fact that they chose the phrasing, I bet Yusei is about to jizz in his pants, was fantastic. It entertained me. It added an extra level to the show.
Did you guys see the Tumblr post that I reblogged the other day where it was all the really weird translations for different anime and stuff?
Oh, I think I did.
They were like really bad translations.
They were like something, whatever she said or something.
Yeah.
Like that was my favorite.
I love the one where it's like, you've made three mistakes. He's holding up two fingers.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people get really bugged by, like, TV Nihon will, you know, leave some words untranslated. I can understand being annoyed to a certain extent if that's just not what you're looking for. There have been series like, obviously, I read a lot of manga, which kind of comes upon the same sort of problems that Watching Toku does, where sometimes you get a really iffy translation, or sometimes they just don't translate it in a way that necessarily makes sense. And there will be some series where I'm like, you know, you could have just translated that. There's no reason to leave that word in as Japanese. It's just, it's unnecessary.
See, with the whole overtime and TV Nihon, like, you know, not feud between the two, I guess, but just between the fans, it's just, it seems so stupid to me because they're providing a free service for us. And all in all, you know, pet peeves aside with whatever you watch, they're pretty well done. I mean, because I've watched a bunch of different subs throughout whatever I've watched, and I've seen really shitty ones where, like, they forget to spell shit. That's like me. Or they'll, like, not put a space bar between, like, three different words. And it's like, you know, minus a few things like not translating or translating something funny, they're pretty well done and it's free. So unless we're paying for this and they're not doing it right, I would just shut up. It just seems so stupid. Like, we could just not watch them at all. We could do that. How about that?
That's basically how I feel about it, too. Like, there's fucking sub wars. Stuff yeah. going like, oh, TV Nihon is the devil. And overtime is god of subbers. And then, like, you have the reverse camp where, like, all the TV Nihon people are like, overtime, shit. And like, it's free subtitles. Like, there's no point in sitting here bitching about which subgroup is better. Each one makes mistakes, some more than others. It varies. And they do so in such different styles. Like, TV Nihon untranslates... untranslates?
We translated it, untranslated it. That's how dedicated.
Doesn't translate a lot of things, and that might bother some people. Whereas...
They always put a little definition at the top. If for the rest of the series they're just going to use the Japanese word, they put a little definition up there.
Whereas, like, overtime, like, localizes, like, to shit and back. Like, everything is localized. Yeah. And we don't really have too many subgroups that are, like, a healthy medium. When we were watching Mega Ranger and stuff, nothing in Mega Ranger, in terms of subs, a lot bothered me about the show. But in terms of the subs, I think Mega and Non... actually did a really nice job of kind of localizing enough to where everything that needed to be translated was translated, but not going so overboard as to, like, change names and stuff like that. So he does good stuff, but it's two sides of the same sub boat, and I don't think the two sides of the boat are ever going to meet in the middle. So we'll just let it go.
Just like the idea of this boat with two different teams on it.
I mean, both sides get a little too heated. Like, people take things a little too far sometimes. But, I mean, no subgroup is perfect. And we obviously have a few issues that we've just pointed out with, like, how overtime or easier subs... translates or localizes and stuff like that, but we still use them every single week, and we're still really grateful. Like, I'm still really grateful that those people translate, because if they don't, I would not be watching them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the biggest thing, is that so many people don't give enough credit to what these people are doing. I mean, overtime in TV Nihon, they do this every week with the shows that air. And if they weren't doing that, I'm sure there's several other people that would step up and deliver the show. But if these groups didn't, or these individuals didn't put forth the effort to do so, a lot of us wouldn't be watching these shows. because we wouldn't understand them.
So. They're like the Coke and Pepsi of toku subs. Otherwise, we'd be watching RC Cola and Kroger brand.
Oh, God.
So it's like...
Oh,
exactly.
Like sick just thinking about RC Cola.
See, exactly. But that's just
it's got
like...
RC in the title, and that just makes me think of like radio controlled soda.
Now I'm thinking about
tuned to a robot. I don't know.
Now I'm thinking of the Transformer and like Brian's review. This figure's total shit, and it just forms the shit of triple shit.
I like the idea of like a radio controlled. Can of soda where all the radio controller does is open it and that's it. It's like, well, that was worth the $50. I'm looking at that post on Tumblr. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Tumblr that I mentioned. And one of them is a picture and it just says "Just according to Keikaku," and at the top it says, "Translators note: Keikaku means plan." Just say plan.
Oh, guy code's on. Cool. Well, that concludes our sub rant. The only sub wars I want to see.
For...
Final things.
This is.
Oh yeah,
the final one.
Make sure you can keep on sending in Twitter questions whenever you want. We will pick them out at random on random weeks. It's pretty unpredictable. Like we're keeping you on the edge of your seats. That you're going to be like, oh my god, are they going to answer Twitter questions this week? It's going to be pretty insane. And our Facebook caption contest is up for another week. So head over to our Facebook page. For a picture of Gaiman Wizard doing some fun stuff and submit your captions. And generally keep an eye out for our little your thoughts on this week's shows or topics, and you can comment on those. And
which we already have one up for Power Rangers.
Yep. Which we
but, probably... you'll have already answered that.
Yeah. Make sure to go answer that. Right. In the past, just hop into the time machine and leave your thoughts.
This is the problem with doing the show backwards.
Well, even if we had done it like all at once today or tomorrow, we still would have been done.
I know. I'm just saying, like.
Well, but there might be another Power Rangers question. For those of you listening last week. please feel free to answer.
I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Well, there will be one of those for superhero time next week.
I'm the king of the peppers.